How the First Amendment may not help you much on the job. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. Google has fired the engineer who circulated an internal memo criticizing the company's diversity initiatives. The guy had gone deep into his claim that men are just better at tech things than women. Google's CEO says the engineer violated company policy about promoting gender stereotypes. Google did not publicly name the guy, who later named himself to the Wall Street Journal and Bloomberg News. James Damore claims he has a legal right to express his views and that he's going to fight the dismissal. This is a teachable moment about gender bias in the tech industry and beyond, and also a teachable moment about what you can say in the workplace. Lee Rowland is senior staff attorney at the ACLU's Speech Privacy and Technology Project. Good morning.
Good morning.
I know you tend to focus on public employee free speech rights, but if someone works for the private sector, help us understand what the law says about our ability to say what we want in the workplace.
Well, the law doesn't say a lot about it. The First Amendment really only acts as a restraint on government. In fact, the first few words of the First Amendment are, "Congress shall make no law restricting freedom of speech or of the press or religion." So when you work for the private sector and your employer is not the government, the Constitution gives you zero protection in terms of keeping your job based on what you say. So while it is possible that states and localities could pass laws protecting speech, and a very, very tiny number of cities and localities have done so, 99.9% of the time, there is no legal barrier to a private employer firing an employee because of their speech at or outside of the workplace.
So if you're signing up at a private employer and they hand you the code of conduct or the employee handbook with rules, you ought to take those seriously.
That's exactly right, David, because they have every right to fire you should you run afoul of them. Now, there is an important asterisk on this, which is employers may not use firing you because of your speech as a pretext to violate other laws that prevent discrimination. So, for example, federal laws that prevent employers from firing employees because of their religion or because of their pregnancy or their sex or their race. But if it is solely because of their speech, there are no federal laws and no laws at the state level that I know of that give employees that kind of protection based on their speech rather than who they are.
Now, there is some talk in this case of the Google employee that somehow National Labor Relations Board rules might somehow apply. It's not a unionized position as far as I'm aware. NLRB, does that inform this discussion at all?
I should be the first to admit I am not a labor lawyer, so there may be some obscure contractual provision that he can take refuge in, but it certainly doesn't come from the Constitution.
All right. Lee Rowland, senior staff attorney at the ACLU Speech Privacy and Technology Project. Thank you for the briefing.
Thank you so much, David.
Thirteen federal agencies have been monitoring and studying the data and will conclude that Americans are feeling the effects of climate change even now. Temperatures have gone up significantly since 1980, and America is now the hottest it's been in 1,500 years. The New York Times got a draft of this report, required by Congress every 4 years. The question is whether the Trump administration will sign off on the report. Many on the Trump team either downplay climate change or have other fish to fry, like promoting coal. Listen to the Nebraska story from Dan Boyce, a reporter in the public radio newsroom called Inside Energy.
Donald Trump makes no secret of it. He loves coal.
My administration is putting an end to the war on coal. Gonna have clean coal, really clean coal.
Trump's statements and actions stand out because the industry outlook for coal overall is pretty bleak. Natural gas is cheaper, renewable power is gaining ground, but then you have Nebraska, an outlier that used more coal in 2016 than it did in 2006. You ask David Brock.
I am the director of the Nebraska Energy Office.
He says the reason's simple. The nation's biggest coal-producing state, Wyoming, it's right next door. Coal trains heading east, literally their first stop is a Nebraska power plant.
Distance makes a difference.
So Nebraska has a rock-solid coal supply at a great price. Also, the state brought online two brand new power plants in 2009 and 2011. Brock says when they were planning those facilities, coal was a no-brainer.
Natural gas was 3 to 4 times the cost of what it is today.
Power plants are built to last 30 or 40 years. The state just shut down a nuclear power plant last year. Coal's going to dominate Nebraska for a long time. There's a caveat, though, to that fact of Nebraska using more coal now than a decade ago.
Nebraska coal consumption peaked in 2013.
Glenn McGrath leads the coal team over at the Federal Energy Information Administration, and yeah, he says while the 10-year outlook for coal in Nebraska is good, since 2013, it's gone the same direction as pretty much everyone else. Less coal. Only David Brocht with the Nebraska Energy Office says it isn't natural gas eating into coal's share.
The amount of wind generation has tripled or more in the last 5 to 10 years.
Nebraska, all those flat plains, has great wind. In fact, Brocht says of wind farms commissioned last year, the biggest one was in the Cornhusker State. I'm Dan Boyce for Marketplace.
And the troubled car service Uber just felt the need to send out an all-staff email saying, essentially, no, the former CEO Travis Kalanick is not coming back. There's a search on for a new boss at Uber, and there's been some agitation for the controversial founder to rise back up. This is the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.